And carefully out of Althea's thoughts, Gus retracted himself completely, removing every thread and scrap of power. If she had an active defense or had been taught, that meant there was a psyker or someone as powerful nearby. Leaving a bit of his own power behind in someone like this after having gone so deep was just asking for someone to come looking. Pivoting from where he was, Gus headed back toward the elevator and the stairwell. The roof access stairwell didn't go into the basement for some reason. He assumed it perhaps had something to do with a docking bay, but he had no way of actually knowing. Taking the stairs, he made his way down quickly and entered the basement. It was dark, unfinished, littered with bits of furniture, and was clearly being used as storage.
Not a great place for electronics. I can't imagine this server being much more than a computer, or what we saw at this stadium, right?
I'm unsure, but I would assume the same as you in this case, Indali murmured. Then again, they might not want the server to survive. This might be a good place for it to be left out to fail, so to speak.
Gus wanted to argue that point, but he'd seen a number of times where things had been set aside deliberately to fade away, one way or another. Frowning, Gus moved deeper into the basement. A significant portion of it was behind a chain-link fence that had been put up. Boxes upon boxes were set on shelves or stacked up throughout the area. It was certainly one of the least professional evidence lockers he'd seen, but at least it was semi-secured. Gus found the entrance to the area. Guarded by a single, solitary man who was reading a magazine, the security was little better than a stage play. Shaking his head, Gus walked right past the guard, unlatched the gate, and moved inside. Letting the gate swing open all on its own and hang there, Gus didn't bother to stick around. The man was so wrapped up in his reading, Gus could have walked in without his magic on, and he'd bet he'd still have a good chance of getting through.
Nothing is organized at all.
Looking from box to box, Gus realized at that moment that things were not in an ascending or descending order. In fact, everything just seemed to be shoved anywhere without any logical placement.
I suppose we search box to box then, Indali said, and then sighed. It could be worse.
Yes, it could. We could have the same situation without any information at all. At least we know there is a server somewhere in here. I have most of the information we needed from Althea's head, and we still have Jenny to follow.
Settling into the ugly and boring task, Gus began to go from box to box, checking each and every one for what he was looking for. An hour and a half of searching finally gave him the result he was looking for. One box that did indeed look like it held the server they wanted, along with a number of hard drives, flash sticks, and other electronic data storage.
Oh, Sarah's not gonna be happy with all this coming back, is she?
I think she'll be very happy, actually. You see, it does work for her to do, but I imagine she sees it the same way I do, shooting endlessly at the range. It's what we were made for, constructed for,
Indali said simply.
I was made to shoot and kill people. I get the most enjoyment out of being used thusly. Good or ill, that is my function. I'm glad that you're my bonded, and you use me in such a way that we're working for good. But that is my purpose, to kill people. I'm a weapon. Serafina is much the same way, a creature of intellect, one that is from, formed, and for this era. One that likes nothing more than sinking herself into the internet and surfing along it as one might go for a drive. She is the least at home in her body.
Listening, Gus couldn't help but completely agree with her statement. Indali and Serafina had very similar outlooks in the end, he imagined. They both were, and weren't, physical people.
Well, let's hope she likes what I'm bringing home for her, because after this, I don't know what to do. This is our last lead.
Chapter 10. The Winged Horn. Indali had been right. Serafina took it as a challenge, a job, and a joy. Jumping straight into everything Gus had brought her, cords came and went, things were plugged in and unplugged, disk drives were installed and uninstalled. At some point, Gus realized there was no purpose in him sitting there and watching her. Her investment in her work was so great that within 5 minutes of starting, she no longer responded to anything he said or asked. Chloe and Janelle were out interviewing more people, which left Gus alone with Indali. She had been very quiet ever since he'd told her exactly what he planned to do to her when he could make the time for it. She wasn't exactly great company at the moment, which left Gus alone with his thoughts and nothing to do. When his cell phone's alarm started going off the next morning, it felt like he'd only been asleep for a few minutes. Glancing down, he saw that he was covered up with his blanket and wore only his boxers and an undershirt. Groaning, he reached over and grabbed his cell phone. Thumbing off the alarm, he slumped back into his bed.
I dislike your alarm,
Janelle mumbled and snuggled in closer to his side, pressing her face into his bare shoulder.
The pitch of it makes my ears ring.
Sorry, Blue,
grunted Gus. Lifting his hands, he rubbed his palms over his closed eyes and tried to get his mind into gear.
Thank you,
Gus said after he finally processed that Janelle had made him comfortable at some point in the night. The last memory he had was closing his eyes and resting against the headboard.
Didn't do it. Sarah got you in bed,
Janelle said and patted his chest.
Get breakfast.
Breakfast.
Gus said, blinking several times. The royal elf started to snore softly, dropping back off into sleep. Getting out of bed, Gus got dressed quickly after a brisk shower, then popped over into the second room. Chloe was unsurprisingly asleep. The curtains were pulled tight, and the room was cloaked in darkness. Serafina was at the desk in the corner of the room, busily clicking through screen after screen. Her eyes were wide behind her glasses, glowing hotly. Realizing she was still working, Gus turned right back around and left the room. Standing in the hall, he contemplated what to do. Before he could even get much further than asking himself what to do, his phone rang. Frowning, he fished it out of his pocket and looked at it. It was a number he didn't know. Tapping the accept button, he pulled it up to his ear.
Hello?
He asked.
Hello, Gus, said Serafina. I saw you checked in on me. I figured I'd call you and tell you what I have so far.
I can just go back in the room,
Gus said, turning around.
Don't bother. I'm not in that prison. I'm in your phone right now. I can multitask much more efficiently when I'm not... when I'm not in my body,
Serafina said, sounding somewhat confused in her own explanation.
You're in my phone,
Gus repeated, wondering what that meant.
Yes, exactly. Much easier like this. That, and you can take me along with you. If we get you a Bluetooth piece, I can be in your ear,
Serafina said with more than a little enthusiasm.
I already have one tag along. I'm not sure I need another,
muttered Gus.
But I can be very helpful. If I'm with you, I can handle any tech needs or electronics and not be a bother,
countered Serafina.
So, let's go get breakfast and buy an earpiece for me to inhabit. Two of them, with a portable charger. That way I can stay with you at all times.
I think that's a good idea. Having three minds working together is much better than one by itself,
Indali argued.
Besides, she's such a lovely and quiet young woman. I enjoy her company personally.
Tell me what you know and I'll think about it. I'll get breakfast in the meanwhile,
offered Gus, heading down the hall toward the elevators.
Wonderful. Okay, Yellow Eyes and the Watcher server,
said Serafina. To Gus, it sounded like she was trying to focus her thoughts.
I've gone over everything you brought me. It was a lot. Like, there's thousands and thousands of threads, videos, posts, and photos. There was a legitimate following for this guy. It's a wonder it didn't spread further on the net. It's pretty interesting.
I imagine it got curtailed pretty hard at the same time they were getting rid of all the bombing videos and everything else,
Gus suggested, hitting the elevator button to go down.
Just got added to the list of delete this and nuke whatever put it up.
Oh, yes, that makes sense. I suppose it all just rolls into one larger picture,
muttered Serafina. His phone vibrated for a second.
You just got another dirty picture from Melody. This one is at least a little less direct than the other she sent you,
Serafina said quickly.
I think someone told her about your pictures from Janelle. It seems like she's trying to send more like that.
I may have let it slip that Janelle had sent photos and that you'd been, responsive to them,
Indali said, even before Serafina finished talking, admitting it up front.
One must get leverage where they can, and this was a perfect opportunity to have her owe me a favor or two.
I mean, yeah, I get it. I'd probably have done the same. Please guide her on my preferences, would you? She doesn't listen to me.
Oh, she does. She just thinks you're not telling her the whole truth. To be fair, you're a little uncooperative sometimes,
Indali said.
I was. Not anymore. Moving forward with all this. Not being a stick in the mud anymore. Or at least, not as much.
Anyway, I've been digging around. I've also got all of Althea's notes from the case and everyone else who contributed to it,
continued Serafina.
Most of it is all pretty mundane, what you'd expect from a case file and workup. I'm still going through it, but I've also sent it over to Melody. She's really good at pattern recognition. I think she'll pick up on anything there.
Smart,
Gus said. He meant it, too. Giving that kind of thing to Melody suited her skills and interests. The elevator door opened, and Gus was led out into the lobby.
Though, I do have one thing for you to work on tonight. There's a bar in town, one that the Watchers were apparently using as an impromptu meetup to discuss things in person and hash out their thoughts, Serafina explained.
And you're betting that they're still going there, if not more so, now that the website is down,
Gus concluded.
Exactly.
Guess I'm going to a bar tonight. What's the name?
The Winged Horn.
Huh. Sounds angelic.
Walking along the sidewalk with his hands in his pockets, Gus wasn't quite sure what to do with himself. Not for the first time as of late, he felt like he was doing his old job again. Running leads down, picking through cast-offs, and rummaging around in forgotten secrets that no one wanted explored.
This is kind of exciting,
Chloe said from his side.
I never thought you and I would get to spend so much time together.
I mean, the new gig has us doing a lot of things when the normals wouldn't be out and about. It stands to reason, doesn't it?
Gus asked, turning to look at the vampire. She was dressed in a simpler fashion than the last time he'd seen her, but it was still flirtatious looking. It was also more than a little racy, given how tight her jeans were and how much of her skin was on show with her loose and flowing blouse.
I mean, yeah, okay. It won't always be like this, though,
Chloe argued, putting her fingertips into the very small pockets.
Of course it won't, and there will be times where I'm not needed at all. Where it might be you and Melody,
Gus responded with a smirk.
That's the whole idea of the company Mel's putting together. The only reason it'll actually work, though, is that almost all of our living costs are in the same pot. Really brings down our overhead. Well, that's how Jan phrased it.
Yeah, I get it. It's kind of like how we had to do it back home when I was a human,
Chloe said, nodding her head.
Wasn't a lot to go around, but you shared what you had so that the others would share with you when you didn't have any.
You know, I'm rather curious about that. I'd love to hear stories about your life. I can't imagine living as long as you have,
Gus confessed, Up ahead, he could see the bar they were heading for.
It isn't as fun as you think. There are long periods of time where honestly, you just live. Big spaces of boring where you go from one thing to another. Just like any mortal would,
Chloe said with a sigh.
It all bleeds together. I've talked to older vampires who felt even more jaded. The longer you live, the more it just all loses its color. Especially if you're not enjoying what you do. The idea of being in prison for as long as I was supposed to be. I considered killing myself many times, just to escape it.
Glad you didn't.
Me too,
Chloe said, and then laughed.
Me too. So much.
Heading up the steps to the bar, Gus pulled the door open for Chloe and then followed her inside. There were quite a number of people here. Almost every table had people. The bar was nearly full, and quite a few people were simply standing around talking to one another. The music wasn't very loud, and the few TVs that were sprinkled throughout had the news on rather than any type of sports.
Definitely not what I was expecting.
The most surprising part was that the room was a 50-50 split between paras and normals. It was rather surprising. There were quite a few different types throughout the room, from succubi, necromancers, and even a zombie, to more mundane things like mages, weres, and vampires. Quite a few people noticed Chloe. It was hard not to, given how pretty she actually was. But then, they all noticed Gus.
Shit. I still reek of being a cop, don't I?
Catching up with Chloe, he stuck his arm around her waist and laid his hand on her hip. It was extremely possessive, but it was also pretty far from what a cop would do. Chloe looked very pleased with the development, though, and just kept walking, leading him straight to the bar. A lovely Valkyrie behind the bar slid over to the open spot where Chloe had just shimmied up. She had short brown hair that fell no lower than her jaw, warm brown eyes, and a tank top which really emphasized that she'd gotten a partial win in the genetic lottery. She eyed Chloe, then Gus, and gave them both a polite, flirty smile. The same smile bartenders the world over had available at all times.
What can I get you?
Asked the Valkyrie.
Anything with some red in it for me?
Chloe said, leaning against the bar top with her hip and turning sideways. Then she pulled on Gus, bringing him up to the bar top next to her.
You, babe?
No idea. Whatever you recommend.
Gus said, talking to the bartender.
Sure thing. That'll be 10 even,
said the bartender, turning her back to Chloe and Gus as she started to prep their drinks. Chloe turned and smiled at him.
Huh. How nice. It wasn't this easy to order at a bar before I went to prison,
Chloe whispered as Gus pulled out his wallet. He made sure that everyone could see there was no hidden badge there. Due to every bad TV drama and movie forcing the idea into people's heads that detectives had badges on their wallets, he'd found that he could often clear suspicion from unknowing civilians by showing off his very boring wallet. Dropping the money on the bar top, Gus smiled at Chloe.
Glad you're enjoying the change,
Gus said, sliding his arm around Chloe's waist again.
Boy, am I ever,
she said with a grin, turning back to the bartender. Gus took this as his chance to start messing around in people's minds. They'd be less likely to pay attention to him now, less aware of him now that they felt sure he was just a man with an odd persona, out with his vampire girlfriend. Keeping his eyes on Chloe, which wasn't that hard to do, he began to drop bits of power into each and every person in the bar. From the bartender, who had absolutely zero interest in him, to the guy in the corner who was completely fixated on the wear on the other side of the bar. Slowly, he began to listen to their thoughts, and just a little deeper, pushing ever so slightly on why they were here at this bar in particular, why this one when there were so many others around. He was able to quickly start eliminating people. Those who were here for the bartenders, here because it was close, or because they'd just wandered in. Faster than he expected, he'd narrowed it down to those who were here for the correlation to Yellow Eyes. of which there were quite a few, more than 70% of the bar patrons, in fact.
Bring us the second round in a minute,
Chloe asked.
Sure, no worries,
said the bartender, who was apparently named Lori, or so Gus picked up from her thoughts. Of everyone at the bar, her thoughts were interesting to him. While everyone here wanted to talk about Yellow Eyes, or something about him, or the fact that this bar had been a focal point, apparently, for several key events, she seemed unique. Her thoughts mostly consisted of hoping for someone to walk through the door of the bar, someone she'd taken far too many extra shifts just to see if he'd show up, an interest that was altogether unhealthy. But it was quickly becoming an obsession for her. It pulled at the very fabric of her existence at times, that who she was as a Valkyrie was now wholly defined by this one man and what he represented. This man was Yellow Eyes, justice incarnate itself. To her, he was a shining beacon of everything she yearned for, everything she wished to surround herself with, and everything she would die for. As a Valkyrie without a pantheon, without the support of a deity, she was always working toward bringing the world up out of the disgusting mess it was in, but always at risk in doing so. Without someone to bestow their faith and belief in, Valkyries lacked a great deal of power. Yellow Eyes, or Warner James, as she knew him, was that hope to her, and she'd not hesitated at all to tell every Valkyrie she knew. Word was spreading of Yellow Eyes and his quest for justice through her community. Even if none of them could prove Warner was indeed Yellow Eyes, they were all under the assumption he was one and the same. Quite a number of those Valkyries were all gathering in the nearby areas. Gus's hold on everyone's thoughts was snapped off suddenly, cleanly, quickly, and efficiently. Whoever had done it had only felt what was going on, but clearly couldn't figure out where it had originated. He could feel the magic of whoever had just severed his mind-reading ability, searching around wildly to find the mind-reader, moving from person to person and checking them. Gus decided this was a good time to blend in. Chloe was in the middle of taking the first sip of her drink. Leaning in, he pressed his forehead to her jaw, then reached out and picked up his drink with his left hand. The vampire was momentarily surprised, but she didn't react poorly. In fact, she laughed, slung an arm around his shoulders, and pulled him in closer.
Oh, well, hello there,
Chloe murmured, lowering her drink.
And that's actually a lovely little mix they made for me. I'm having quite the night already.
Lifting his head up, Gus pressed his lips to Chloe's and kissed her. Chloe very happily and readily kissed him back. Her arm tightened around his shoulders and she held him close, pinning him against her body. Feeling the tracking magic settle over him, it hesitated for a moment, then fled away, checking the person directly next to them at the bar. He couldn't tell if it was his proximity to Chloe that had confused the tracking magic, but he was glad one way or the other. That, and kissing Chloe, was a very fun experience, to be sure. After probably longer than was suitable for a bar, Gus let up and eased back from Chloe.
Oh, we need to go out like this more often if this is how you get,
Chloe said with a laugh. Then she leaned against him and bitted his neck gently.
I'm all flustered now.
Trailing the tracking magic back after it had searched every single person, Gus found it went to a sour-looking woman. She was standing in the doorway that led to a back room. Without even brushing his powers over the woman, he knew beyond a doubt she was an angelic. A strong one. One who had likely been around since the dawn of time, he imagined, given her strength. He couldn't get a good look at her, given her position and how Chloe was practically vamping him right here and now, but he doubted he wanted to look too closely at her anyway. She was the type of person that could probably feel someone's gaze on them, and getting her attention was definitely not something he wanted to do. Reaching up, he slid his left hand into Chloe's hair and held her head against his neck. It was mildly embarrassing having her go at him like this, but it kept him off people's radar. Chloe moaned, her free hand snagging in his shirt and holding on to him. He felt it when she suddenly bit into his neck as if she wanted to feed from him. The empty spots where her fangs would be prevented her from doing much of anything to him. Several seconds after she tried to drink directly from him, she shuddered and pulled back.
Oh, okay, I'm getting those damn implants, she said in a husky whisper. Damn. Okay, where's my drink? Shit.
Turning back to the bar, she grabbed her drink and started to down it. No longer enjoying it as a drink, but wanting to feel like she was feeding. Or so he imagined. Thankfully, the angelic woman turned and retreated back into the back room. Lori, the bartender, came by. She dropped another drink off for Chloe and smiled at Gus. Dutifully, he pulled out his wallet and dropped down 2 more 50s.
Just keep an eye on her. She's thirstier than she thought, Gus asked. Stronger in the red is probably better.
I get that,
Lori said wryly, picking up the money and leaving. Chloe finished downing her drink and set it back on the bar, then immediately picked up the second one.
Definitely need to do this again,
Chloe said, her voice sounding a bit higher pitched now.
Come on, there's a booth open over there,
Gus said, pulling Chloe toward the open seating.
Whew, yeah. Sorry. Just a bit lightheaded. I think the alcohol is going straight to my head,
Chloe mumbled, moving with Gus. Getting Chloe seated, Gus slid in next to her and pulled out his phone quickly. He was pretty sure Serafina was still connected to it, given how hot it was. Tapping in a quick message to her and sending it, he waited for a second. The response from Serafina came immediately.
Warner James is definitely a name that shows up in the reports. I'll dig into it and get you an address.
Perfect. We finally have a name to actually check into.
Next to him, Chloe picked up her drink and took another long gulp of it.
Now we just have to get through tonight and keep listening in when we can.
Chapter 11. Cut Free.
That's yellow eyes?
Janelle asked from the seat next to him.
I mean, that's Warner James,
Gus murmured. They were watching a man in his 30s slowly walking toward his car. He was currently leaving the hospital after having likely undergone some testing or treatment.
And Warner James is yellow eyes?
Prompted Janelle.
So it would seem,
said Gus.
I'll find out when they get a little closer and I can tap into his thoughts. But, he's got some very normal human fears. Very normal human fears, especially relating to mortality. About him dying before his daughter gets out of high school.
Retribution isn't human, Janelle said.
Nor is he mortal. Or so our information tells us,
Gus added.
Which means, Yellow Eyes, while he is an interesting character and has angelic aspects, isn't retribution.
And that leads us back to square one,
said Janelle with a long sigh.
All of my contacts are drained, and everyone I've talked to either doesn't want to talk or doesn't know anything.
Kind of at the same spot myself. Not much to go off of anymore. The few tidbits we had were all tied up in Yellow Eyes, and...
The man they were watching paused when he reached the vehicle he'd arrived in and promptly threw up, bending over at the waist and emptying up his guts. An attractive young woman rushed over to his side and started to care for him right then and there. At the same time, Gus had pushed a fraction of power into the man's mind. He was definitely Yellow Eyes, waging a one-man war against injustice, forcing his brand of vindication upon those he deemed unworthy and hunting down evil. Yellow Eyes was a force upon the world. Except He was also apparently very unhealthy as of late. His health had deteriorated rapidly in the last week or two, to the point that his girlfriend, Daria, had forced him to go to a number of medical specialists. Each visit resulted in more tests and treatments for his symptoms, without any actual progress on determining what was wrong with him. Each and every day was getting worse for Warner, his energy draining away, his stamina fading, and his strength betraying him.
"And the LOIs is definitely not retribution," Gus said with a shake of his head. "He's very much a human, and very much going through what is likely the end of his life. I'm going to bet that whatever he does to become Yellow Eyes is eating away at him. I can't imagine him being able to continue much longer. He's choosing the Yellow Eyes persona over his own life."
"Oh, I see," Janelle murmured, and then leaned her head back against the headrest. "We should call and check in with Melody. She said she might have something for us today, that she was running a few things by her nephew-in-law."
"Huh. Only nephew-in-law that I know of is Sam. I mean, I imagine that given his age, he's definitely someone who could give us some insight into this. He did help us cross over to other planes previously." "Huh. Great,"
Gus said and pulled out his phone. Before he could even tap in the number, it was already dialing Melody.
"On it,"
Serafina said through his earpiece.
Not sure I particularly like this."
"Having two people who preempt your needs is something to be thankful for," grumbled Indali.
You're right, Orange. I'm complaining over nothing. You're right. Thank you, Sarah,"
Gus said, and then turned to look at Janelle. She quirked an eyebrow and smiled back at him.
"Where do I requisition a personal assistant?" she asked in an amused tone.
"I don't honestly know. Not sure how I got Sarah to begin with,"
Gus admitted honestly. If Serafina heard him, she remained silent. The line started ringing in his ear. It picked up almost before the first ring even ended.
"Gus! My love! My indigo! My husband! I'm so delighted you called me. Did you like the last photo I sent?"
Melody practically screamed into the phone.
"I did, actually. The nightgown looked lovely on you,"
Gus answered. He really had liked the photo. It had been right up his alley.
"Really? Fantastic. I bought a whole bunch more stuff like that. I can't wait to show them off to you. Some with a teeny bit more fabric, some with a lot less,"
Melody purred.
"But I don't think that's why you're calling me, is it?"
"No, it isn't. The last lead we had just dried up. Jan mentioned you might have something for us,"
Gus asked.
"You're in luck, because I do indeed. Sam runs a building out of Larimer. I'm going to send you an address. He said they can pop you over to Retribution's Redoubt, which at this point might be somewhere to look, despite Sam and a number of others having already gone over it with a fine-tooth comb,"
Melody said.
"If anyone can find the trail, though, it's you, my darling Indigo."
Gus couldn't argue that fact. He'd become far more aware of his tracking ability after having hunted down Janelle.
"Got it. Hit me with an address,"
Gus asked.
"Sarah probably already has it. I imagine she's listening in. I'll send it over anyway. Now, let's talk more about what photos to send you, okay?"
Melody said.
Okay.
Gus agreed. Getting out of the car, Gus looked at the building they'd parked in front of. It looked like an apartment building, if he had to be honest. The exterior had the look of something 30 years out of date, one of those buildings where anything that would put it into a condemned state was repaired, but nothing else.
"Looks like a safe house," Janelle commented.
"Was thinking the same,"
Gus muttered.
"It's almost so obvious in its disregard for the exterior that it stands out. But, whatever. It's not as if I haven't gone into similar places and been surprised by it actually just being a slum."
"True," Janelle concurred. "Are we supposed to go in?"
"Melody didn't say. I figure we go in, or at least try,
Gus said.
Sam seems like a pretty mellow guy, so I figure he's probably waiting for us to show up.
I haven't had the pleasure,
Janelle commented as she followed Gus to the front door.
Melody speaks fondly of him.
Yeah, I get the impression he's helped her out in the past. Probably with the contracts, given his background. He's an incubus. Incredibly handsome. He's probably gonna make your knees a little weak. He isn't actively doing that to you. He's just, a very old incubus, and his power tends to radiate out,
warned Gus. Opening the door for Janelle, Gus took a step to the side, then followed her in. The lobby was more or less what one would expect from the outside. A run-down entry that had no one there. There was some serious dirt buildup on the walls, and it looked like someone hadn't cleaned the floor in weeks.
Ah, perfect timing, said a voice from nowhere. Come in, come in.
A portal unzipped itself out of nothing, with Samarixis, or Sam, standing on the other side of it. He was more or less exactly as Gus remembered him. Sam's dark brown hair was still in a ponytail that didn't belong with the times, but it didn't matter at all, given how handsome he was. Today he dressed in casual clothes, jeans and a t-shirt that made him stand out more so because of how they clashed with his looks. His almost black eyes moved from Gus to Janelle and back.
Uncle, Sam said with a wide grin. You're looking good, and this must be Janelle, the one you went off on that mad dash to save. I can definitely see why you went to all the trouble.
Hey, Sam,
Gus said with a grin. Marching up to the man, he deliberately hugged him and held on to him.
How are things? Melody says hi, of course, and I'd like to formally invite you and the family over at some point for dinner.
Sam had gone stiff at the sudden embrace, but then relaxed and laughed, hugging Gus back in return.
I'd like that. I can bring over some of my brats, introduce them to you,
Sam said, patting Gus on the back.
They've been curious about meeting their Uncle Gus, the bogeyman.
Stepping away from Sam and fully entering the other plane, Gus looked back to Janelle. Her cheeks were red, but she was stoic-looking. If the incubus had any effect on her, she was smothering it completely, or it was quite minimal.
Samarixis, a pleasure to meet you,
Janelle said, stepping through the portal and holding out her hand.
A pleasure indeed,
Sam said, bowing his head and kissing her hand. Janelle stepped through the other side, and Sam shut the portal with a wave of his hand.
So, I understand you're on a crusade to find another wayward lamb. This time the Angel of Retribution himself,
Sam said, turning toward Gus.
Yeah, the Originator's coming back. On a job to find retribution and make it easier,
Gus said, deciding to completely trust Sam. Blinking slowly, Gus couldn't really tell what was going on in the man's head.
Oh, Melody told me,
Sam admitted, then let out a snort of laughter.
Well, let's get you on your way then. I'm going to get you over to Retribution's Redoubt. It was his last stronghold, where he set up his defensive position against our silent overlord.
Great, thanks,
Gus said, scratching at his side.
But of course,
murmured the incubus. Turning to the side, he pulled his hand through the air itself, and a portal formed. It yawned open quickly, showing off a courtyard. On each side of the courtyard were walls.
Nothing to fear inside the walls, but don't go outside if you can avoid it. The plane is full of, injustice, brimming with it.
Got it.
Gus stepped through without another word, looking around. Not far away sat a giant set of scales that were heavily imbalanced to one side. A mass of black cubes was piled up atop one another.
Oh, that's better,
complained Janelle after the portal shut behind her.
Huh, he really does put out a lot of sexual magic. You have to actively fight against it.
I mean, he'd be a terrible incubus if he didn't, right?
Gus asked with a soft laugh, staring at the scales.
And if this is Retribution's last hold, and he was here for the creation of the world, are these then a literal representation of the scales of justice?
Janelle followed his gaze, looking at the massive construct that dominated the courtyard.
I'm not sure it's a representation. It might be the actual thing, mumbled Janelle. We are way out of our league here, aren't we?
The last part of her statement wasn't really a question.
I think maybe we are, said Gus after some thought. But that's the way it goes. We're just much smaller pieces on a rather large board. But hey, at least we're not the pawns. Could be worse.
Unable to resist an odd sensation, Gus was slowly moving closer to the scales.
And how do you know that? Janelle asked.
Because, unfortunately, this is the end game. The opening moves are long since over. They've been shifting pieces around the board for a while now, getting ready to start swapping higher values with one another. And that's where we are.
Laying his hand to the scale, Gus had an immediate sense of magic. Primal, unchallenged creation magic. The stuff of the very universe itself, that which was made in the beginning, bound for all time into the scales of justice, weighing the world out one action at a time.
I find that less than encouraging, Janelle said.
I mean, yeah, but at least we're not the pawns.
Gus repeated, staring into the magic that was rapidly whirlwinding through his mind and soul, tearing him apart from the inside out and leaving bits of him all over. His mind blanked out and Gus was carried away, only to snap back into himself as if he'd been flung there.
Gus!
Shouted Janelle, jerking at his arm, trying to get his hand free from the scales.
Huh? Sorry. Sorry,
he said, pulling his hand away from the scales. Left over inside of him was a fraction of a millionth decimal point of a percent of the sheer raw magnitude of what he'd felt. It boiled away inside his chest, demanding to be set free to return from whence it came, indignant, righteous, and firm in its belief that it was correct, that it was the choice that all should follow, justice itself, and terribly incensed at being used thusly. Hanging on to that filament of magic, Gus clawed at it, pressing it down and keeping it put. He needed it, he realized. Needed it to find retribution. As he closed himself up around that bit of magic, he felt the fort around them respond in kind. The mortar between the bricks became firm and resilient, the stones themselves moving closer together. Chips and cracks that had started to eat at the masonry filled themselves in and shifted back into their true place, responding to him as if he were the owner of the scales and fort itself. Banners unfurled from long-forgotten flagpoles that had been barren moments ago. Then it all faded away again, everything slowly returning to how it had been. As if realizing that Gus wasn't its true owner, that retribution hadn't actually returned, and that justice wouldn't be meted out.
Our world is dying, Janelle whispered,
watching as a banner tore free from the pole where it was hung and slipped away into the wind, fluttering into the sky and vanishing over one of the walls.
Isn't it?
I think it is,
Gus agreed, a lump in his throat.
I think it really is.
Holding on tightly to the speck of long-lost magic, Gus slowly looked one way, then the other. He saw nothing, of course, and could only blame his own foolishness for even trying. Sinking into his true self, Gus became a boogeyman of unqualified power in the pursuit and tracking of prey. A hunter. The trail of magic went in every direction, unendingly, as if eons had passed as retribution left, fought, came back, rested, and then did it again, and again, and again, for unending years, only to vanish into obscurity. The most recent path led to a wall. It felt much older than Gus would wish, but he had no other options available to him. Reaching the wall, he could see where it had gone straight into the bricks.
"There's a trigger,"
Janelle said, and then reached up to press on what looked like a very normal brick. Then she kicked at the bottom of the wall. There was a hard clack from inside the wall, and part of it swung inward on creaking hinges.
"Retribution is dead, isn't he?"
Janelle asked as they stared at a dark staircase that descended into the earth.
"There's no path that leads back up from there, which means this was a one-way trip,"
replied Gus.
"Either he's alive down there, or dead down there."
Silently, the two of them began heading down the steps. Halfway down, Gus pulled out his phone, flipped on the flashlight, and used it to guide the way.
I wonder what happened to my projection when the portal closed,
Indali mused.
Did you just leave a pile of clothes in a chair somewhere?
I imagine I did. Oh well, I can remake her in a flash. I've already remade her so many times, it's as easy as blinking,
mused Indali.
Sarah, you didn't tag along for this, did you?
Gus asked, suddenly feeling rather apprehensive. There was no response from his earpiece or his phone.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, I imagine she'd be leaving behind her body in such a shift. One cannot cut away their soul from the body without repercussions.
Reaching the bottom of the stairwell, Gus's flashlight hit the center of the chamber. The truth was revealed to him in that moment. Torches, which had once been set up in the corners of the room, had long ago burned away into ash and dust. Nothing more than charred remains were left behind. Of the chamber, there was only one other noteworthy aspect of it. A large corpse in the very center of the room. It was in an odd kneeling position, almost as if it were in supplication, its forehead pressed to its wrists and its hands held out in front of itself. The hair, a golden brown, covered the face and hung down past it like a curtain. Stretched out to either side were large white wings that hung limply at the sides of the body. The feathers were dirty and covered in dust. From what he could see of its flesh, the body had become mummified in this cold, dark, dry room.
And so ended retribution,
Gus murmured softly. Janelle walked over to one of the wingtips and knelt down there, looking at the ground.
It's almost ritualistic. There's a number of concentric circles drawn out around him, she said. Whatever he was attempting to do, he'd planned it in advance and put the work into it.
Grimacing, Gus turned his attention to what was around the remains of Retribution. He was indeed crouched down amongst what looked like circles in circles in circles, spreading inside and outside of the great circle in the middle.
Damn, he killed himself, didn't he?
Gus asked, shaking his head.
I don't know. But there's no violence on him. Not that I can see. No blood anywhere under him. No stains,
Janelle observed.
No indications of any trauma to the head. And his body position doesn't look like it changed from the moment of death.
It's almost as if he just wasted away right there.
Starvation? Dehydration?
Gus speculated. In front of the angel was a sword laid out on the ground. Next to that were two round tokens. He couldn't identify what, if anything, was inscribed on either one, but he had the impression they were decorated. Reaching out to touch them, Gus found his hand couldn't cross the circle. His fingertips couldn't move past an invisible barrier that seemed to project up from the circle.
Huh,
Gus said, poking at the air itself. It felt quite solid to his finger. There was no give in it whatsoever.
In his death, he sealed away his corpse,
Janelle guessed, running her hand over the magical shell that surrounded the angel.
I don't even know what to make of this. An actual angel. A creation angel. One who was there for the formation of the universe itself. Dead. Dead and forgotten in a fortress of his own making, waging a solitary war he would never win.
Chewing at his lower lip, Gus slowly shook his head.
Now we have to go back to our client and tell them that we found retribution. But in finding him, we confirm the worst possible outcome,
Gus said slowly.
That one of the keys to fighting their war is gone. Long since gone and turned into a mummy.
Clicking his tongue, Gus got to his feet and stared at the corpse for several seconds.
Rest in whatever peace you were able to find,
he said after thinking on his words. He could respect the angel for what his purpose had been.
I don't think anyone can take up the mantle you held, but we all have to do our part, don't we?
Gus released the small bit of magic he'd held captive back into the world and lifted his phone up a bit higher. He didn't quite feel that this was right to do, but he did need proof. Slowly, he began walking around the corpse and took pictures of the body, the items, and the circles. He also took a short 1-minute video just in case he missed anything in the photos.
All right, that's our proof,
Gus said. Turning on his heel, he began marching back up the stairs and out of the final resting place of retribution. Chapter 12. Large Family Tree. Stepping out of the portal and back into his home plane, Gus found that Sam was no longer here. There was a glamour set up on the far wall of the lobby that Gus could see right through. On the other side, it was a portal that was partially open, a clear invitation for Gus to pop on over.
Maybe another time. Unfortunately, I have to relay some bad news back to the boss, and then she has to tell the clients.
Looking at his phone, he tapped the screen, flicked it open, and then thumbed the call directory. Moving toward the front of the building, he hit the last contact, which was Melody, and then stuck his phone back in his pocket. The line began to ring in his earpiece and picked up on the first ring. He wasn't really sure how Melody always managed it, but she did.
Hello, darling,
Melody said loudly into the phone.
So, how did the little extraplanar trip with John go? She knocked up?
Rolling his eyes, Gus moved to the front of the building and opened the door for Janelle.
No, Jan isn't pregnant. Though we did find what we were looking for,
Gus said, turning and looking at the royal elf as she passed by him. She gave him a raised eyebrow at his comment.
And how do you know that?
She asked, with an evil-looking smile that gave Gus a small twinge of fear. Exiting the building, Gus reached into his pocket and pulled out the keys to the car. Passing them off to Janelle, he crossed her path and went toward the passenger side of the car.
Doesn't sound like a good thing,
Melody muttered.
Because it isn't,
Gus agreed, looking around himself.
Just give me a few seconds to get in the car. That'll help with the volume.
Oh, yes. You don't have anyone with you to cast a simple magic spell to block people from listening in,
Melody said, and then clicked her tongue.
I'll see if I can't get a siren stone from Finn. That'd help.
Gus thought about the little stone Mark carried on his person and realized it would indeed be helpful.
Thanks, Mel. I'd like that. I do love gadgets and toys,
Gus said as he opened the door and got into the car. Once both doors were closed, he sighed.
Our best lead, Yellow Eyes, isn't Retribution. Retribution is dead.
Wait, what?
Melody asked, her tone growing quite lifeless.
Yellow Eyes, Warner, isn't Retribution. He's just a vigilante with something angelic going on. Maybe a Nephilim, but that's not something you can tell at a glance. Seems like he's borrowing power that isn't his. But he's just a human having a bad time,
Gus said, getting his seatbelt on.
All right, got it. And the second part?
Asked Melody with a sigh.
We found Retribution. He was in that plane Sam sent us off to. Hidden passageway in a wall. Found a dead, mummified angel at the end in a room. Retribution was a big guy, apparently. Easily almost 7 foot tall. Massive wings. Very dead. I took photos and a video just to make sure we had proof of it. Can't touch the corpse, though. Had a magic circle around it.
There was a creak over the line that sounded like Melody leaning back in a chair.
Right. In other words, we did our job. We found Retribution. He's just dead.
Just so.
I'll set up a formal meeting with our clients. We can give them the rundown in person. I really just...
Melody paused mid-sentence.
I just wanted it to go well. My father has told me a lot about the Originator. A lot about the before times and what was supposed to happen. The idea of him being able to return, to fix things, was an idea I was really enamored with.
Well, it isn't like that won't happen now. It'll just be harder. For all we know, the clients will have another job for us in the same vein,
countered Gus.
And how is your dad?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't heard from him since before we got this gig,
Melody said with a complete lack of concern.
He drops off the face of the earth sometimes for a while. The longest was 2 years. Was something weird happening in South America, I guess. He'll turn up, probably with some news stories and a souvenir or two. I mean, that's how he found my mom.
Melody laughed at her own words, but to Gus, it had a serious undertone of something else in it. He wasn't going to ask about Melody's mother, nor was he going to bother her about it in any way. If she wanted to talk about it, she would. She was never hesitant to discuss her feelings or annoyances with him, provided the time was right. Until then, he'd just wait. Running a hand through his hair, Gus turned his head and looked at Melody.
Not a problem. We'll just shift some of the offshore assets and bring some back on shore. We don't lose anything. It just looks like it on paper if we do it right. Can you handle that, Sarah?
Melody asked, pulling the wheel to the right and moving them out of the lane. Serafina's response wasn't something Gus could hear, given that Melody was using an earpiece. Everyone had already suggested to her several times over that she could put it through to her car, but she wasn't having it. The idea of someone walking by and possibly hearing the whole conversation through her window was a fear of hers. To her, someone only having half the conversation was considered preferable.
Great, thanks. That'll make it a lot.
Melody stopped talking, turning her head to the side.
Likely listening to someone's response. I wonder what it was to get her to stop talking, though.
Turning around, Gus looked at the back seat where Vanessa was sitting with Trish. Dressed in a business casual skirt and blouse, Trish was, as ever, a stunning picture of beauty. The moment his eyes touched her, those green eyes that seemed to glow with an inner light caught his own. Then she smiled at him, and he felt his libido instantly respond to her. Because with Trish, that picture of beauty included a massive dollop of sexual domination over him. Her white hair was tied loosely behind her head, her slightly tipped ears standing out more prominently now since Janelle had joined their little marriage.
I know, and I agree,
Trish said before Gus could say anything. Her smile only grew wider as she spoke, her eyes glittering as she held him enthralled.
But it's just how she is. None of us would change her for a minute.
I don't know, Vanessa grumbled with a shake of her head, sending her dark brown ponytail swaying back and forth. Light brown eyes that viewed the world critically in nearly every way were now locked to the back of Melody's headrest. Then she looked at Gus and reached up to adjust the blouse she was wearing. If he didn't miss his guess, Trish had helped her dress today, and she looked just as lovely as the dryad did. It would be nice if she actually listened sometimes. She can be stubborn, stupid.
Says the other stubborn, stupid, beautiful woman,
Gus said, looking at Vanessa with a grin. Vanessa's eyes flashed with that comment. Oh, you... Stopping mid-sentence, Vanessa closed her mouth. Then she smiled and shrugged a shoulder at him. You love me for who I am, she said with a strong amount of confidence. Stubborn, stupid, and all.
You're right. Amazingly enough, I do, Gus said, grinning at her.
Ooh, I know who I'm pairing up several times tonight already,
Trish said with a deep undertone of excitement. She was the unquestioned ringleader in their nightly games if she was around. Everyone typically would just pile up into her bedroom and wait.
I can't wait to watch you two. I'll start with Vanessa. We're here.
The car came to a stop, and Melody put it in park.
Indeed, here we are,
Melody said, turning to the rest of the car.
My lovely colors, my contracts. How I love all three of you. Though, I must confess, I do have my favorite.
Turning in her seat, Melody put both her hands on Gus's face, pulled him across the center console, and kissed him hard. I mean, he's my favorite too, so I don't care, Vanessa said, opening her car door.
It goes without saying who my favorite is as well, the favorite of us all. But I think she said it for his benefit,
Trish agreed, opening her door as well. It wasn't until the doors closed that Melody released Gus.
They're not wrong,
Melody admitted, patting Gus's cheek and kissing him again.
You are the favorite of everyone. To be fair, sex with everyone else is fun, and I do love them, especially with a dryad conducting our fun. But you're my one and only true love, Gustavus. Had you told me I wasn't allowed any others, I would have been content with only you.
Really? Little late now,
Gus responded with a chuckle.
Tell me to send them away, and I will.
Melody said seriously, all fun and games vanishing from her face.
Speak the words, and you'll be the only one for me, Gus. My love, my husband. I'll shatter everything. My contracts, the marriage certificates, everything. In fact, don't say anything. Be absolutely silent. Watch as I blow everything apart and dedicate myself to you, and only you, my Gus. My indigo. My spiritual partner, my link, my other half. There is no length I won't go to show you the depth of my love for you, sweetest indigo.
As Melody spoke, the indigo contract had started to glow faintly, but now was brighter than he'd ever seen it, brighter than even her red contract, which was like the sun at times. It was almost blinding at the moment.
I formally renounce all my contracts,
Melody began in a serious tone.
And revert all indentured spirits to the...
Before she could finish, Gus put his right hand over her mouth in a panicked rush.
Holy shit, she was really canceling everything.
Staring at the contractor only a few inches from him, he could barely see her through the glow of her indigo contract. It was growing brighter and brighter by the second. Without meaning to, and simply being too close to her, he accidentally peeked into her mind. It was full of nothing but startlingly simple thoughts of sacrificing everything for him, worrying in a paranoid and psychotic fashion that she'd ruined things by forcing other women on Gus, that she truly did love only him in this way, that to her, he was her one and only. Everyone else was fun, and she cared for them, loved them, but there was only one Gus in the entirety of the universe, and everything needed to burn, die, or be removed to show her dedication to him. There were no other answers available to her. Gus was her answer, and all would burn for him. Shocked by the intensity of it all, Gus shuddered and recoiled from her clearly fractured mind. Melody looked like she was going to jerk her head away and try again.
I love you, Melody Hellstrom. Now, stop glowing so bright.